This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Meller.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. Not Jeff Meller today. Jack McGrath in for Jeff today. White Sox take on the Giants in game two of a three-game set. It's a pair of veterans on the mound today with Adrian Hauser on the bump for the Sox and Robbie Ray for San Francisco. Robbie Ray has returned to form after his Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago. The former Cy Young winner has been great. His ERA this season is actually lower than it was during his Cy Young season. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Also, Tim Kirkjian is going to join us, the Baseball Writers Association Career Award winner. He'll join us a little bit later at 1 p.m. Your pregame for today's show starts at 2:30, and your first pitch with Len and DJ at 3:10. The White Sox are amidst a stretch against the NL West, which has been the best division in baseball so far this season. 12 straight for the Sox against the NL West. They wrapped up a series with Arizona on Wednesday, started off a three-game home set with San Francisco last night, and then they travel out west to face the mighty Dodgers starting next Tuesday. They'll get a reprieve from the teams over 500 with a trip to Colorado. They open against the Rockies on the 4th of July. So the Sox, before they got into the NL West, wrapped up a series up north, though, last Sunday. You may have missed last week. Maybe you just want a quick recap. Let's talk about what happened this week in White Sox baseball. So last Sunday, the White Sox had a chance to win the series in Toronto. Things started off slowly, and the Blue Jays carried a 2-1 lead into the 8th inning. But then Austin Slater worked a 7-pitch walk to open the 8th. The next two hitters went down on strikes. Michael Taylor singled. Chase Meidroth walked. That brought up Andrew Benintendi with the bases loaded.
A swing and a soft chop. Right side picked up, and Hoffman can't get it. And they've tied the game. Hoffman tried to glove it. He overran it. Benintendi safe. It's 2-2.
One hitter later, Miguel Vargas has been red hot. It was him in a big spot.
Deep breath by Hoffman, the 1-2 serve. A swing and a base hit fair into the corner and left. Taylor scores. Meidroth is in. Miguel Vargas just kind of softly, almost like a slow motion swing. He hooked that down the line and left, and they lead 4-2.
Grant Taylor closed out the game in the 9th for his first career MLB save. Sox won that one 4-2. Shane Smith, up until this point, had been establishing himself as the potential White Sox All-Star representative. Go back just over 10 days ago, he had a 2.38 ERA on the year, but the last two starts have been less than stellar. He gave up 5 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings against St. Louis last week, and then this week, it wasn't too pretty either. He pitched 2 innings, giving up 5 more earned runs on Monday in the opener versus Arizona. First, it was White Sox killer Josh Naylor.
3-2. Swinging a line shot fair into the right field corner. Is going to score a couple. And Naylor just keeps on beating the White Sox. That is a 2-run double, and it's 2-0.
In just over 50 games against the White Sox, Naylor is hitting .347. With a .979 OPS. He's been a White Sox killer his entire career. Pavin Smith piled on in the 2nd.
1-0. Hit a ton to right, and that will be a 3-run homer for Pavin Smith. It was on a fastball, pretty much down the middle, and it's 5-0 AZ.
Yeah, 94.
Shane Smith's ERA balloons up to 3.38 on a year, up over a full point after his last two starts. Sox drop Monday's game 10-0. We're going to debate his All-Star candidacy a little bit later in the show. Is it him or is it Miguel Vargas? We'll dive into that a little bit later. On Tuesday, the White Sox missed an opportunity to even the series. Corbin Carroll was out with a wrist. Star third baseman Eugenio Suarez, the power hitter, was out after being hit by a pitch, and Josh Naylor, who we just mentioned, had a shoulder issue coming into the day. Three big boppers out for the Diamondbacks, but Ketel Marte picked up the slack.
And he swings away on 3-0, and he cracks a deep drive to right center, and it's a home run for Ketel Marte. So 3-0 doesn't matter. He's swinging, and that is his 15th homer of the year, and homer number 155 as a Diamondback.
Jordan Leisure was the opener for the White Sox in that game. It was a bullpen day. Mike Vassell was lights out for the next five innings coming in relief. But it was a great defensive day for Arizona. The White Sox hit the ball hard, and Ryan Noda nearly tied the game.
A swing and a fly ball out into right. It's deep, and it is caught. Leaping catch. McCarthy just took away a home run.
Isn't it amazing how often you see outfielders rob guys of home runs because they just didn't hit it far enough?
That same inning, Luis Robert has been struggling to open up the year, but he started to catch on at the start of the week. He put a charge in this one.
McCarthy a chance. This one, though, to left is deep, and it's gone. So Robert ties the game with a home run to left. It's 1-1.
I'll show you, Ryan Noda. This is how you do it. Hit it out of the reach of the left fielder. A slider right there that Robert hammered into the bullpen for the White Sox to tie this one up.
Huge opportunity for the White Sox here in the fifth with the bases loaded, tie game, and two outs. But Arizona's defense was just so good.
2-2 on Mike Tauchman, the pitch. A swing and a fly ball, well hit out into right center. Thomas going after it, and he makes a catch, a running grab by Alec Thomas.
Statcast says that one would have been a hit 56% of the time, but Alec Thomas got a great jump on it. Mike Vassell went 5 1/3, but was pulled with two on in the seventh for Brandon Iser.
Stretches and pitches. Swing and a ground ball up the middle. Sosa can't get it. It's into center field, a base hit. Grichik will score, and it's 2-1.
That was Alec Thomas with the base hit. So he played great on defense, played great on offense. That RBI single put the D-backs up 2-1. That run went on Vassell's tab, and the Diamondbacks tacked on two more in the inning to win 4-1. Wednesday, the White Sox looked to avoid the sweep, and the bats finally awoke. It was the Lenin Sosa game. Tied at 2 1/4, his bat came to life.
And he swings and cranks one high and deep to left, and it's way out of here, over the bullpen.
He didn't need no two count, just two strikes.
A go-ahead two-run homer.
And again in the eighth with the White Sox up by three.
And he swings, it's a high fly to left. This baby's going to go. Number two today for Lenin, and it's 7-3.
Well, he is hot today. He has found that swing.
First career two-homer game for Lenin Sosa.
Sosa 3-for-4 on the day with four RBIs. White Sox win that one 7-3. Yesterday, Logan Roop worked in and out of jams for the Giants. The Sox came up empty with the bases loaded and one out twice. It wasn't until the sixth that the Giants struck.
Swinging a line drive, shallow right, diving attempt. Noda can't get it. It gets all the way to the fence. At least two runs are going to score. Adames is in. Koss scores. And it's 3-1 San Francisco.
Ryan Noda misplayed that one. He's played just 26 major league innings in right field, according to Baseball Reference. DJ mentioned after that play he thinks it was due to some of the inexperience. Noda came in, tried to dive for the ball, and it bounced past him. Those two runs were the difference. Sox dropped that one 3-1. They come into today at 26-56, 30 games under 500, just past the halfway point in the season. They'll try to get back in the win column today against Robbie Ray and the Giants. Mentioned already, Robbie Ray has been phenomenal so far this season. He's 8-2 with a 2.83 ERA and 104 strikeouts. The measurables don't look as great as they did in his Cy Young season just because he hasn't pitched as many innings as he did in that season. So the WAR's not as high, but every other number for Robbie Ray looks just about as good as when he won the Cy Young a few years ago. He goes up against Adrian Hauser, and this is another big start for Adrian Hauser as we approach the trade deadline. He's a name that will be floated in a lot of rumors. He comes into the day with a 2-2 record and a 2.27 ERA, 26 strikeouts, and limited time on the year. And Hauser, the former Milwaukee Brewers pitcher, who has been rock solid for the Chicago White Sox ever since he came over. And the White Sox potentially could flip him at the deadline. We're going to talk more about potential pitchers the White Sox could flip at the deadline. But before that, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark tomorrow, June 29th, as the White Sox take on the San Francisco Giants at 1:10 p.m. The first 7,500 fans in attendance will receive a Southside legend, Luis Aparicio bobblehead, presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. We're going to talk more about that next because the White Sox signed a former All-Star pitcher this week. We'll talk about him and the pitchers that the Sox could move at the deadline and the impact these veteran pitchers have had. That's all coming up next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller today. And the White Sox signed an all-star, former all-star pitcher. That's Noah Syndergaard. You may remember his name from the New York Mets. He last pitched for the Mets back in 2021. He's dealt with multiple injuries throughout his career. The last time he pitched in Major League Baseball was in Cleveland in 2023. Syndergaard is one of these guys that the White Sox picked up with high upside in a low-risk, high-reward type of move. Noah Syndergaard, at his best, was a Cy Young candidate. Now, that was 10 years ago, but at one point, he was a guy who was a Cy Young candidate. Can he be a guy that comes in and provides good innings for the White Sox this season? I think it's entirely possible that he makes the big league roster. But the upside for Noah Syndergaard is really extremely high and an interesting pickup by the White Sox. He was signed on a minor league deal, so he'll report to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona to start. He eventually could make his way up to the big leagues and pitch for the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox have a lot of veteran pitchers, just like that. Adrian Hauser, the guy that's going today, is a veteran who has had some bumps in the road in his career, but the White Sox went out and got him on a low-risk, high-reward deal. And since then, he's been able to pitch really well and may have some value at the trade deadline. Aaron Civale, who pitched fairly well yesterday, worked his way in and out of jams, a veteran guy who the White Sox went out and got that has a lot of upside, who may have some value at the trade deadline or just to teach some of these younger pitchers that the White Sox have how to start in a major league game. Martin Perez is another one of those guys who he got hurt earlier this season, but is able to come in and be a veteran presence in the locker room. The White Sox have done a really good job and a really nice job of picking up some of these low-risk, high-reward pitchers. Chris Getz actually spoke earlier this week on the value of the veteran pitchers that the White Sox have added in the season.
Yeah, we're always monitoring what's going on at the minor league level, the major league level, and if a player has an opt-out, he's on waivers, or if there's a trade opportunity that makes sense. You know, any move that we made, whether it be Hauser or Civale, because those are, obvious examples, those guys, the biggest value was being able to protect some of our young arms. But also knowing that there was some upside in acquiring those players that perhaps they could help us at the deadline. But the priority is for getting those guys out here and pitching well, and that helps us in a lot of different ways.
So Syndergaard's one of those guys that you can add to this rotation potentially and can help the team. He had Tommy John surgery in 2020. He's had lat issues. He's had finger issues more recently. So the back half of his career has been plagued by injuries, but he finished fourth in Rookie of the Year voting for the Mets in 2015, finished with Cy Young votes in 2016, where he compiled a 2.6 ERA. So he's bounced around the big league since then with stops with the Angels, Phillies, Dodgers, Guardians, and then he missed all of last season. Right now he's in Glendale and a part of the White Sox organization. Will the phone be ringing at the trade deadline for these guys, though? Chris Getz talked about what the phone situation will be like at the deadline and if it'll be ringing off the hook.
Yeah, fairly active. You know, we've got some players that have already garnered attention, and you know, if it makes sense for us to make a move that to help us for the long term, then we're going to consider that. But in the meantime, I just want our players to go out there and play. You know, we're coming off of a really nice series in Toronto, especially after those two tough losses with St. Louis. But for guys to bounce back like they did, you know, speaks to their ability to, you know, rinse off some tough games and get back out there and play better baseball. So, you know, we still have plenty of time until the deadline. You know, I have received, you know, inquiries on some of our players. I will say that the draft is the priority right now. We're a couple weeks out, and most teams are doing the same. So, you know, we're going to make sure we're as organized and prepared as possible for the draft. And then once we close the door on the draft, we'll focus more on the trade deadline.
MLB draft opens up on July 13th. Chris Getz referencing that there, that's coming up in a couple of weeks here. But the way he's talking about it, I think it just goes to show today's game how important it is that Adrian Hauser has another quality start. He's a veteran pitcher. He's a little bit older for the White Sox, 32 years old, but somebody that's going to be on the trade block most likely for the White Sox this season. He's pitched six games so far in a big league uniform for the Sox, a 2.27 ERA. He's been phenomenal, and with the lack of pitchers available right now in Major League Baseball at the trade deadline, because so many teams think they're going to be in it at the trade deadline, a guy like Adrian Hauser is going to have some value to bring back one or two prospects to this Chicago White Sox team. Another guy like that, it's going to be Aaron Civale, who pitched last night and pitched pretty well last night, giving up just one run up until that sixth inning. So with these veterans, there's going to be a good opportunity for the White Sox to recoup some value. For one other veteran that there's been a big question about in terms of trade value, that's Luis Robert Jr. He's not in the lineup again today. He left Wednesday's game with hamstring tightness. And the way Will Venable described it to us in our manager show is that it's probably most likely that, reading between the lines, I don't know if I'd expect to see him in a start this weekend with the off day on Thursday and then the off day on Monday. But Luis Robert Jr. has been playing a little bit better as of recently. He's been a big disappointment so far this season for White Sox fans. Chris Getz was also asked about Luis Robert Jr. earlier this week. This is what he had to say.
You know, when you still watch Luis Robert play, you're looking at a guy that can change the game pretty quickly in a lot of different ways. And those types of players are hard to find. You know, and that's the reason why there's a lot of attention on Luis Robert, because he's earned that right, because he's performed at a high level, and to find talent like that is not easy. So, you know, obviously he's been more productive in the past, but that doesn't mean that we don't believe in the potential here with the Chicago White Sox. We've never out there making phone calls on you know, about Luis Robert. It's teams calling us, and we have conversations, and we kind of stick to the plan that we've been working by, you know, so far, in which if we feel like we can help the long-term health of the organization, so be it. But we like having Luis Robert, and I enjoy having him in the lineup on a nightly basis.
What do you think the hit component has been missing with him for, I mean, we saw how good he was in 23. What do you think it's been missing? Yeah, I guess last year injuries a little bit, but what about this year?
You know, it's tough to really pinpoint. You know, his bat speed is still there. You know, you look at how hard he's hitting the ball. You know, there's plenty of indicators in there that show that, you know, he's maintaining his athleticism as a player in the box. You know, the decision-making and contact ability. Yeah, there's some frustrating times. And, you know, the strikeouts, although, you know, there are times where he's striking out, you know, and I know he's getting frustrated. There's also, you know, you look at his history with some of the swing and miss, it has been in there. So, you know, we're continuing to work with him. He's, you know, he shows up every day very motivated. And, you know, sometimes in baseball, you know, it just clicks and you don't really know why. But it's certainly not going to click if someone doesn't have the right work ethic. And that's not the case with Louis. He's a pro, and he wants to get this right.
Well, White Sox fans have been waiting for it to click for Luis Robert. 185 average on the season, 270 OBP, 313 slugging, just a very low number. You see some guys have batting averages as high as 313, 584 OPS, which is well below the league average. You thought maybe he could turn a corner here after he homered against Arizona on, that was on Tuesday, I believe, that he went deep against Arizona. He hit the ball hard in that game, but then he comes back and is pinch hit for after one inning on Wednesday, comes out of the game because he pulled up with hamstring tightness in center field. And you're just not going to risk it at this point, continuing to play Luis Robert, hoping he can start to hit the ball a little bit better, even though it looks like this might have been a time for him to start to turn a corner. He's picked up some hits recently, but you're not going to play him at this point, especially with so much of his game predicated on running the bases. So the White Sox aren't going to risk it again today. Maybe he'll be available off the bench. It sounded more like a day-to-day thing for Luis Robert Jr., but he's once again out of the lineup today. Hopefully he can continue to recoup either some trade value or continue to play well for the White Sox. Still don't know if he'll be gone from the team after this season. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to a special area to receive autographs from some of their favorite players, plus enjoy family-friendly activities, kids can run the bases, and more. Tickets start at just $10, includes all fees. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Let's pause 10 seconds for legal identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
We're going to take a quick break here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. When we come back, we'll dive into some more White Sox storylines and preview this upcoming game against the San Francisco Giants. It's Robbie Ray and Adrian Hauser coming up at 3:10. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath filling in for Jeff Meller today. White Sox take on the San Francisco Giants. It's Adrian Hauser versus Robbie Ray. First pitch coming up at 3:10. Pre-game show starts at 2:30. Right now, we are lucky enough to be joined by one of the best in the business, Baseball Writers of America 2023 award winner for career excellence, Tim Kirchin. He's an ESPN MLB senior writer and analyst for Baseball Tonight. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How's it going?
It's going really well. And I want to pick your brain on some of the national storylines as it relates to the Chicago White Sox. And I feel like White Sox fans, it's very easy to get frustrated with the way Luis Robert Jr. has performed. And we've seen the potential before. He has the potential to be a 40-run home run hitter in Major League Baseball and play Gold Glove level defense. But the past 2 years, we just haven't seen it. As the trade deadline comes up, how do you view Luis Robert Jr., and how do you think he's viewed on a national level?
Well, it's pretty hard to tell because I see the same talent that everyone else sees, but I also see an OPS under 600, batting average under 200. I mean, he's got 8 doubles and 8 homers in 73 games. I mean, that's just not good enough for a guy who should be way, way better than that. So this is why it's going to be tricky at the trade deadline. You got to think he could help a lot of teams, but a 185 hitter isn't going to help a lot of teams. He's going to have to find whatever is missing here, and then someone will go after him. But how much are the White Sox going to get for somebody who is struggling this badly? That's why the trade deadline is such a fascinating time of year, because GMs earn all their money right now. Are we in? Are we out? And what are we going to do? How much do we give up? Do we trade our best player? It's really a tricky time, but I still think in the White Sox best interest, they should take the very best deal for Luis Robert Jr., move him to a place where maybe he can be more productive, but they got to get as much as possible in return.
We were talking a little bit earlier about some of the pitchers the White Sox have too. They've signed some veteran guys. How many players on this White Sox roster do you think other teams are going to have interest in trading for at this trade deadline?
Well, I think it's a case where so few teams are going to be sellers. The Rockies, the Marlins, you know, the Nationals maybe, and the White Sox. So when you're in that group, more and more teams are going to come after your guys. But I'm just not sure there are that many pitchers on the White Sox that could really make a difference for another team. You know, teams are not looking for a fourth or a fifth starting pitcher for down the stretch. They need to acquire somebody who can help them get in the playoffs and then help them do something in October. I mean, I'm just not sure the White Sox have starting pitching that could really, really help. I mean, Adrian Hauser's a veteran pitcher who's having a very good year. He could help a bunch of teams, but it's really going to be interesting what happens here.
Important start for Adrian Hauser today as we near the trade deadline. He goes up against Robbie Ray at Wrigley Field today against San Francisco. So, Tim, I know you're a very big baseball historian, and last year the Chicago White Sox set the record for having the worst record in baseball. But it looks like the Colorado Rockies are keeping pace and may even have a worse pace than the White Sox had last year. Something I've heard from some White Sox fans is there's two camps, really. Some White Sox fans want the Rockies to have the worst record of all time, so that kind of lifts that burden from the Chicago White Sox. But some other fans want ownership and management to have to wear having the worst record of all time, just sort of as a, all right, you guys failed, now it's time to get better. As a baseball historian, what do you think fans should be rooting for? That their team has the worst record of all time, or that they'll eventually be passed by this Colorado Rockies team?
I think you would want to get passed by the Rockies. I don't think you want that, you know, that reputation of having the worst record ever. So that's the way I would look at it if I were a White Sox fan. Do I see the other side of this, that, you know, the pain needs to linger in order to get management and, you know, ownership to really try to rebuild this team and get some people in there? I certainly understand that, but I wouldn't want to have that. I would root against the Rockies. But having said that, none of this brings me any joy. I got no joy last year out of watching the White Sox struggle that badly. I've got no joy this year watching the Rockies play this poorly. This is not healthy for the game when a team last year and a team this year is that much worse than everyone else. I mean, the beauty of baseball is there's no such thing as an upset in baseball. And yet in the last couple of years, when the White Sox would win a game on the road against a really good team, people would say, oh my God, that was an upset. And same thing with the Rockies this year. So we got to get past this for the good of the game. And let's hope the Rockies get better from here. And let's hope the White Sox continue to get better from here.
Do you think there's a specific reason why we've seen two of the worst baseball teams of all time in the past 2 years? Is there a specific reason for that, or is it just coincidence that these two things are happening back to back?
Yeah, I think it's more coincidence than anything. However, when you look at the teams that have won the World Series in the last 15 or 20 years, the Cubs in 2016, the Astros in 2017, these teams had to rebuild. The Nationals in 2019, these teams were so bad that that's how they got good. And I think there are certain teams out there that look at the blueprint of the Astros and the Nationals and the Cubs and say, well, that's our best shot to do this. You know, unload as many veterans as we can, save as much money as we can, but most important, draft and develop some young guys and let's win with those guys eventually. But that is not an easy formula to follow, but that's the best I can do. But I think it's more a coincidence than anything. But I repeat, I've never seen a bigger gap between the good teams and the bad teams in baseball that I've seen in the last 10 years. And that's not a healthy thing for baseball.
There's another trend I wanted to ask you about, too, if you think it's coincidence or if it's just something, or there's a reason for it. Yesterday, we saw two more great pitching performances with Nick Martinez nearly throwing a no-hitter. Sonny Gray had a really good day as well. You tweeted out, and you confirmed it with Elias, that the last 2 days produced 12 shutouts. I'm reading your tweet word for word in 24 games, and there's never been a two-day span in history with a minimum of 20 games where half of them were shutouts. So a lot of shutouts the past week or so. Do you think that's a coincidence? Is there something going on here with Major League pitching and hitting? Or is it just a coincidence that we've had so many shutouts this week?
Well, I think it's more than a coincidence. It shows me, again, just how dominant the stuff is in the Major Leagues right now. Every game I watch, I wonder, when I watch, no matter what pitcher it is, it seems, how does anyone ever get a hit off of this guy? I mean, Jacob Mizrowski came up for the Brewers, and he didn't allow a hit in the first 11 innings that he pitched. It's just ridiculous. Chase Burns came up for the Reds and struck out the first five batters, all of them Yankees. No pitcher's done that in his Major League debut since 1961. So the lesson here is the pitching, the stuff at least, is so remarkable. The velocity, the breaking stuff, the secondary pitches, everyone's got a change up. It's not a surprise that teams get shut out routinely now. And yet the beauty of baseball is Friday night, the Orioles scored 22 runs. The Phillies scored 13 runs. The Nationals and Diamondbacks combined for like 17 runs. A lot of runs were scored on Friday night after two straight days where half the scores were shutouts.
Tim Kirkjian joining us here on ESPN 1000. This is White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Mellor. Tim Kirkjian, senior MLB writer for ESPN. And there's another positional trend that I wanted to ask you about, because you wrote a really good article, I believe it was a few months ago, about the first base position and how that position has sort of evolved. And it's been a revolving door for the White Sox this year. Andrew Vaughn started off there. They've had Tim Elko, who profiles as your typical first baseman that you used to see with the big power. Lenin Sosa's played the position, Ryan Noda. There's been a lot of guys in and out at first base. And your article, the premise, was basically that the stereotypical big power first baseman is somewhat a thing of the past. So what have you seen trends-wise in first base? And with a big question mark at first base right now for the White Sox, what type of player would you target for that position?
Well, we've gotten so far away from the big first baseman who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. We are instead looking for platoon situations. We're looking for someone who can play other positions. We're looking for someone who can cover more ground defensively because of all the shifts. Even though shifts are outlawed, there's still a lot of ground for that first baseman to cover. I don't think this is a great thing for baseball that we've gotten away from the first base position being a premium offensive position. Last year, the batting average for first baseman was the lowest in the major league since 1900. The OPS for first baseman was the lowest since 1968, the year of the pitcher. And this just tells me that our young executives especially are saying, we don't want a guy who just hits the ball out of the ballpark, can't help us defensively, can only play one position. We want somebody that can play multiple positions. And that's why we've seen a real lack of production at that position. It's just, the days of Mark Grace and Don Mattingly and John Olerud and a few others, left-handed throwers, really good hitters. Those days are kind of over right now. Now, maybe it's just cyclical. Maybe it'll turn around, but this is really odd that the first base is not the productive position that it used to be.
Tim Kirkjian joining us, senior writer on MLB for ESPN. Tim, thank you for joining us so much. We're running out of time here, but before we go, I need one word answer. Cal Raleigh or Aaron Judge, who's your MVP?
I'm going Judge, but I would not argue with anyone who went the other way. That's how good Cal Raleigh has been.
All right. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate your time. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino. White Sox.
Captain Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
White Sox Weekly, Jack McGrath in for Jeff Mellor. And White Sox fans, save all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy $20 weekday and $25 weekend select lower level tickets. while supplies last. The summer savings section is presented by Wintrust. Different approach, better results, includes fees. Some exclusions apply. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. We have a very special guest right now. And since the start of May, he has an 809 OPS and 9 home runs in just over 50 games. That is Miguel Vargas, third baseman, playing first base today for the Chicago White Sox. Miguel, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys? Thank you for the opportunity.
Of course. Thanks for coming on with us. And Miguel, first question I want to ask you. You're scheduled to play first base today. What do you like more, third base, first base, or is there some other position you like playing?
I love playing third base, obviously, but, you know, we're in this situation, then I can help my team playing first, and, you know, I'm always able to try to help my team, and I'm glad that I can do it.
So since the start of May, you've been red hot, or really in your last 50 games. You've won an American League Player of the Week award, and you've been very good. How did you adjust your swing at the beginning of this year? We've heard a lot about the hand placement. What specifically went into that?
You know, I just come one day to the field, and I got a really good conversation with the hitting coaches. And then, you know, we talk about some adjustment in the play. And, you know, it wasn't like a really big adjustment. We just put my hands a little bit up where I can be more able to fire for the fastballs. And then, you know, I get a result right away, and that was a good thing for me. And, you know, I really believe in, you know, trust in that. And thank God I got good results.
Why specifically do you think moving the hands up helps you? You mentioned the fastballs there a little bit.
Yeah, you know, just put my hand a little bit where I went more straight to the fastball. My back got more straight to the fastball, and, you know, I feel I was missing a lot of fastball. And then, you know, just be able to go more straight to the ball was really helpful for me.
We're talking to White Sox infielder Miguel Vargas on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. What's the atmosphere like in the clubhouse this year with Will Venable? Because I know last year there were some down moments for the team, but what has the atmosphere been like for this team this year?
I've been great so far. I think, you know, we got a lot of young guys. Then, you know, we all trying to, show that we can be able to play in this league. And we also have a couple of veteran guys then, you know, helping us to, you know, learn the game. And one of them is Will, who is the leader of the team. And, you know, he's always out there, you know, trying to help the young guys and, you know, figure out how we can, you know, win games. And, you know, that's a huge thing for us.
Is there a veteran guy that you've relied on for advice, or is it Will Venable, or is it one of your coaches? Who have you gone to for advice this year and help with your adjustments?
I mean, I feel that, you know, everybody, like, when you see guys then play more than 10 years in the show and more than 5-6 years in the show, you know, those type of guys, they know how the game is. And, you know, we trying to win games. You know, obviously go to one specific guy. You always like trying to see how guys can help you the most. And I think, you know, especially Will, he played in the big league for 5-6 years, and, you know, he knows how the game is and how hard the game is. And he, you know, always, when you get those advice, it's always helpful for you.
We're talking to Miguel Vargas on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. So last year, before last year, you were in an organization with Los Angeles, which is always right in the thick of things. They just won the World Series last year, and you were traded to the White Sox, who are in a transition period. What was that adjustment like for you coming from Los Angeles' organization to the White Sox?
I mean, you know, I think it was good for my career. You know, obviously, come here and play every day, it was a good thing for me. But, you know, I feel then, you know, the two organizations have two different goals. I feel here we got a group of young guys, then we're trying to learn how to win games. And, you know, for the other side, for the LA Dodgers, they, you know, have so many superstar MVPs out there. They're trying to win a World Series every year. And then, you know, for us, it's just, you know, trying to learn how to win games. And, you know, I feel then one day we'll be out there in the top for sure.
when you say learn how to win games, what exactly does that mean? Is that doing the little things? Is it doing things differently? What exactly does that mean to you and to the rest of your team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said before, we got a young group of guys. Then, you know, we've not been here in this league for very long. And, you know, here in this league is a lot of small games and little things that you have to make for win games. And that's what we're all trying to do. And, you know, I feel then sometimes everybody trying to do, you know, too much. And, you know, we get, you know, disengaged on the game. But I feel then if we can get more locked in on those little things, I think we've got to be in a good spot in the future.
So your stats this year, we're talking with Miguel Vargas on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Your stats with runners in scoring position, and specifically with runners in scoring position and two outs this season, are very good. Does your mindset change at all in those high-pressure moments, or every time you go to the plate, are you kind of thinking the same thing?
You know, obviously when you got running in scoring position, I always have the mindset to, you know, feel then this run right there is going to be very important for the game right now. Got to have a good impact. So I'm trying to put a little bit, I would not say pressure, but, you know, I would put some little bit on me for, you know, trying to drive the run. And I feel, you know, always trying to help my team is what made me, you know, put me in a good spot when I go to the box and running in scoring position.
So I've heard on broadcast and in interviews that Kyle Teal, since he's come up, is just a fun guy in the locker room. Have you interacted with him at all, and what's he been like?
Yeah, he's a really fun guy to have around. And, you know, I'm from my side, and I've been trying to teach him how to dance salsa. And, you know, have been really, really, really tough for me. And, you know, but he's been better. He always have the energy, and that's a motto for us. And, you know, it's always good to have him in the locker room.
Are you a good salsa dancer yourself?
Oh, yeah. Come on, man. I'm Latin. I'm from Cuba. I know how to move, you know.
How's Kyle picking it up?
He's doing better. He's doing better. He's got some progress lately. But, you know, he needs to keep going.
Other than yourself, who's the best dancer on the team?
Oh, me, for sure. 100%.
Other than you, that's the easy answer. Other than you,
other than me, ooh, I would say Martin Perez has a really good move too. I've been seeing him dancing some salsa, and I think he's really good too.
I got you. And then compare this year, obviously very different than last season. Last season there were some down moments, but comparing this year to last year, what are some of the notable differences you've noticed both in the locker room and with the team?
You know, obviously, last year I didn't even know everybody in here. I think coming to this year, knowing everybody, and, you know, they, since day one, they trying to help me and make me feel important. And then, you know, I feel that was very important for me. And, you know, just trying to trust the process and, you know, believe it. And, you know, hopefully I get good result.
And then last question before we go, because we're running out of time here. Robbie Ray, very good pitcher on the mound against you today. Without giving too much away, what's your game plan against Robbie Ray?
Oh, I know he got a really good fastball, so I gotta be ready for the fastball today, and, you know, hopefully put it in play.
All right, that's Miguel Vargas on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Thank you for the time, Miguel. We gotta take a quick break. You're listening to White Sox Weekly.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back into the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jack McGrath, in for Jeff Meller. Big thank you to Miguel Vargas for joining us. Says the plan against Robbie Ray is to look for his good fastball. He has a very good fastball and a very high very low ERA at 2.83, even lower than it was in his Cy Young winning season. It's Adrian Houser versus Robbie Ray. Sox against the San Francisco Giants. That's coming up at 3:10 today, first pitch. Aloha, Sox fans. Celebrate 05 reunion weekend from July 11th through 13th. Don't miss Friday night as the Sox face the Guardians at 7:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 2005 Champs Hawaiian shirt. Stick around after the game for a post-game fireworks show presented by Beggar's Pizza. You won't want to miss this giveaway, plus the unveiling of Mark Burley's statue. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/2005. The phone number is 312-332-3776. White Sox fans, it's the midway point. One game past the midway point. And I want to do a mid-season review. What are your positives about the team? What are your negatives about the team? That's coming up on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, now weekdays, noon to 3.
ESPN 1000, Hard Rock Casino, White Sox Network. Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. First pitch today at 3:10 between the San Francisco Giants and Chicago White Sox. It's Robbie Ray versus Adrian Hauser. I'm Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. Our producers today, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, and Charlie Bevins is here running the controls for us. Those are the other voices you'll hear on the show today. And you'll hear them right now, too, as we want to do a mid-season review of the Chicago White Sox, because there's been positives and there's been negatives. I want to give my three biggest positives for the team so far this season. Number one, Shane Smith and Mike Vassell's development as Rule 5 picks. It hasn't been pretty for the past two starts for Shane Smith. But other than that, he's been pretty spectacular. And typically, when you have a Rule 5 pick, you don't expect them to contribute necessarily at all. And Shane Smith is a guy who has contributed at a very high level and might even be the Chicago White Sox All-Star representative this season. Mike Vassell was phenomenal the other night. He got charged with a run because he left guys on when he exited. But for a guy who is a reliever and a long reliever, to have a sub-3 ERA like he does, and a WAR, a B-WAR that's above 1, Mike Vassell has been extremely strong so far this year. Two Rule 5 picks in 1 year, that doesn't happen for most teams, where they have two Rule 5 picks that pan out. And both of those guys have panned out this season. Number two, this team does not quit. And last year, I think at times, I don't want to say the team quit, but at times they didn't show that they had full effort last season. At times they didn't show like they really got up for games. We saw the very long losing streaks last year. This team has had their skids this year for the White Sox, but Will Venable has transformed this into a team where I think you really have a team that does the little things well. They've had their lapses at times, but generally it's a team that runs the bases aggressively. It's a team that knows how to drive in a run with a sac fly, that has had defensive errors this year, but not nearly as many as last season. And I think that's the effect of Will Venable. Brendan Riley, who was filling in yesterday on the pregame show and postgame show, asked in his gateway to the booth, or was asked by a fan in the gateway to the booth, and he asked Len and DJ the question. He said, what do you think a positive of the team is? And Len mentioned that he thinks that Will Venable is a manager that's going to be around the big leagues for a long while. My last one, before I get to it, I want to hear input from our producers, what they think the biggest positives have been for the White Sox so far this season. Brendan, what do you think has been the biggest positive for the White Sox so far this year?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this before the show a little bit, and the struggle I have is that I feel like there's one overriding theme that fits all of my answers. That's that Chris Getz obviously gets it. And it's very big picture, but when I say that, you look at all the pieces he's added, be it vets or young pieces. You know, he traded for Vargas, who is sure looking like a hit. He traded for Mydroth, who's looking for like a hit. Teal looking like a hit. But then you look at the veteran additions they've made the last couple of years. You know, Fetty was a big piece they added last year that was able to help them get something. We don't know what they're going to get at the deadline this year, but how good has Hauser been for them to this point in the season? It just seems like up and down throughout roster building, he's been hitting pretty consistently. And when your GM is doing that in any sport, you end up being good.
I'd agree with you there. He's made some trades that have looked really good. And the Miguel Vargas one is one that stands out. Charlie, what do you have?
So, first of all, Brendan, would you say Chris gets it?
Yes, I think you could say that.
Right there. Mine for sure is Miguel Vargas. I think what there was probably a little bit of like a whiplash going from a team like the Dodgers last year to a team that was in the position the White Sox were in. And so for him to bounce back from that and be on pace to over a 3-win player, he's probably going to hit 20 or 30 home runs this year. The fact that that isn't the lost cause that it kind of looked like it was to close the year last season, the fact that he has made all these adjustments and that's really, you know, Chris Getz has two signature moves right now. It's the crochet trade that Brendan highlighted that is looking very well right now. I mean, the two guys that weren't even the headliners of the trade are doing what they're doing right now. But for me, it's the Vargas trade where it was this huge moment at the trade deadline that it looked like it was going to be a pretty, you know, pretty bad stain on the resume that ended up turning into like a very good player.
In the past 50 games, Miguel Vargas has 9 home runs. He's been really, really good. He keeps up that pace, and you're looking at a guy who could potentially be a 30 home run hitter in his career, and he's still young. And you speak about the crochet trade, Charlie, and my final positive, and we were talking with Shane Norling, our morning show producer, and he came in, and I asked him what the positive was, and I 100% agreed with him. The crochet trade was the right move. And I think we can say that with some level of confidence now that the White Sox, while Garrett Crochet is a great pitcher, probably made the right move in moving him. You already have multiple players up from that trade up in the big leagues, and the two making the biggest impact are Kyle Teal, who has a 396 OBP in the big leagues so far this year, and Chase Meidroth, who has been a spark plug in that lineup and has played extremely good defense. And the guy who might even be the best player from that trade eventually, Braden Montgomery, is still in the minors and still hasn't come up yet. The fact that those guys have panned out so quickly gives me a lot of hope that the crochet trade was the right move. And there are fans that didn't want it to happen last year, but personally, I think that we can look at right now and say with good confidence that was the right move to make, and Chris Getz made a really good trade right there. So those are my three biggest positives. If you disagree with me about the crochet trade and you still think it was the wrong move, give us a call, 312-332-3776, because I have a lot of confidence that was the right move. On to the negatives. Luis Robert has continued to struggle. That's my biggest negative so far this season. We mentioned the numbers earlier. His slugging percentage is still below 350. And with the injury adding up again, Tim Kirkjian said it, it's very hard to imagine that this is a guy that they can move on from. The team also still makes sloppy mistakes at times. We saw earlier in the season where Chase Meidroth had a ball go off his head, but the positive off of that is that he was able to recover from that and not let it fester. Last year, we might have seen something like that faster. You still have Ryan Noda, who in his second career start in right field, misplays a ball. Things like that are going to happen when you don't have a complete roster, and that happened last night. Things like that are still going to happen where you're still going to make some of those sloppy mistakes when you're not fully developed. So that's my other negative. My final negative, and it's really not that big of a negative because he's been playing a lot better recently, had another double last night to go along with his pair of home runs from two nights ago, is that Colson Montgomery's still not up. But the way he's been playing recently, and we'll get you some more info from down at AAA in Charlotte later in the show, he's been playing well recently, but he was a guy you kind of expected to start the season at shortstop. And he had to go with Paul Janish and work on some things in the Arizona Complex League. If he's able to bounce back, you can turn a negative into a positive. But right now, Colson Montgomery still not being up is one of my negatives from this season. 312-332-3776, excuse me. Give us a call with your positives and negatives so far this year. Brendan, what's your biggest negative for the Chicago White Sox so far this season?
We talked about a little bit off air. I'm being completely honest when I say I struggle a little bit with it because I do feel genuine excitement when watching this team this year. I think if you're watching them on a day-to-day basis, you do. But I think how could it not be Luis Robert, right? Like I guess this one feels like trying to make up any other reason as a number two is tough because we know – like, Luis Robert Jr. is a guy who's capable of getting MVP votes. He's not that guy, obviously, this year, and he wasn't really that guy last year either. Beyond that, it gets tough. I mean, it's not something we've seen quite yet, but they got a lot of young arms in the starting rotation where it'll be interesting to see how they manage that as these guys are approaching, you know, innings numbers they maybe haven't seen before. But the gap between the disappointment of Luis Robert so far this season and anything else is so far, I struggle to come up with what number two would even be.
I kind of agree with you. It's hard to – that's obviously the big spot on the resume right now for the Chicago White Sox team. And you really hope that at some point this season he bounces back. And all White Sox have been waiting for it. And it's just frustrating that we haven't seen that bounce back so far this season, that – not only, like, if he bounced back to a high level, there'd be questions even, do you trade him with two more years of club options? But he hasn't even bounced back to a level that justifies the contract yet. Charlie, what's your biggest negative on the season?
I hate to just continue to pile in on this, but, like, it has to be Luis Robert. I mean, this is a guy who has been who's won a Silver Slugger Award. This is a guy who has been a five-win player on the whole of a season. And you're just getting nothing from him. And it could have been, you see enough that like, hey, you know what, let's keep this around. Like, let's have this be one of the building blocks that we're going to, you know, we can't just have like a bunch of young puppies running around here. Or we could say, hey, like, this is an awesome season he's having. Let's try to maximize the value in a return for a trade of Luis Robert. Instead, you have neither of those options and you're trying to scramble and figure out like, okay, well, should we wait it out and like see if the value can get back up there, or should we just try to move even though the value is at its, like, it's put them in a very difficult situation for how to handle this and how to, again, maximize their trajectory.
Guys, they've been so much more fun this year, right, already as it is. Could you imagine adding peak Luis Robert Jr. to the middle of this order right now? Like, it just would be such an extra addition.
Peak Luis Robert Jr. is a 5 wins above replacement player, and right now he's not even above 1. So if you add a peak Luis Robert Jr. to this lineup, you add 4-ish, maybe 5 more wins to this team. It's a big difference, 100%. You're right. And peak Luis Robert Jr. with the big bat and his base stealing ability, if he has a high on base percentage, he makes everybody else in the lineup better too. He's one of those guys who can be a multiplier in your lineup, because you start having to pitch to the other big bats in the lineup, like a Miguel Vargas.
He was leading Major League Baseball in stolen bases, hitting below 200. Like, that's crazy. That's
Can
so
you imagine
hard to
how
do.
High that number would be if his on-base percentage was at a higher number than it is right now? He'd be leading baseball by a big margin in stolen bases if he was able to get on at even an average clip so far this season. So Luis Robert Jr. is our biggest disappointment so far this season. Coming up next, I want to talk about Shane Smith and Miguel Vargas. You have two guys who have been positives for the White Sox so far this season. And the question is, who's going to the All-Star game? Because the Sox only get one representative. And both of these guys, you can make a case for deserving it this season. The Sox could have more than one representative, but that's looking extremely unlikely. So the most likely scenario is the Sox only get one representative. Who's it going to be? We're going to make our cases for Shane Smith and Miguel Vargas when we come back. Before we go, take advantage of one of our best offers this season. Get one ticket and two beers to select White Sox games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. Includes all fees. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We'll be back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch. ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. And White Sox fans entered the ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win an exclusive City Connect package. One lucky fan will receive some of the best City Connect gear, including a jersey, sweatshirt, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. The White Sox were undefeated in those City Connect jerseys up until last night when they lost on a Friday night. We're undefeated Friday nights at home. We're going to continue the conversation about some positives this year for the Chicago White Sox. And two of those positives have been Miguel Vargas and Shane Smith, who at this point have to be viewed as the two top candidates for the All-Star game for the White Sox. And Brian Bannister was on the White Sox podcast from CHSN this week, and he mentioned that a lot has gone in to data and development for the Chicago White Sox, refocusing from Chris Getz and that front office to focus more on those things. And there are two players in this White Sox system, in Shane Smith and Miguel Vargas, who have made significant adjustments so far this year. This is what Brian Bannister said on that podcast about Shane Smith and picking him from the Rule 5 draft and the adjustments that he's made this year.
We just liked how he had unique movement attributes. He got big extension. His fastball seemed to play well above its individual attributes. And then he came out of the chute in spring training throwing 99 and really pitching like an ace. And then he added the changeup, which balanced out his arsenal, something he didn't have prior. And all of a sudden you had that, the, you know, arsenal of a starter. And then once you're there, you know, guys have to take it to the next level and actually become a polished major league pitcher and feel confident on the mound and be able to do it in front of a large audience. And he's fully embraced that and been really good. So lots of credit to a lot of people on that one. But when you build a good pitching culture, when you're open-minded, you're looking for certain unique attributes in all these pitchers, you know, whether it's an Adrian Hauser, et cetera, you're just going to stumble on guys that other teams aren't creative enough or are overlooking, or some tweak here or there. And you're not going to hit on everybody, but you're just trying to have these nice wins every once in a while.
So Bannister says it there. Increased velocity for Shane Smith when he came into the White Sox system. They weren't expecting that. And adding the changeup has been a game changer. He talks about pitchers needing to come into the major league. Shane Smith had no issues transitioning into Major League Baseball. He got off to a raucous start this season. The past two starts haven't been as good, giving up 5 earned runs respectively in each of his last two games. So because of that, it begs the question, could Miguel Vargas, instead of Shane Smith, be the White Sox All-Star representative when teams are selected next weekend? Miguel Vargas is another guy who's made a big change. He's moved his hands on the bat, which has made a big change. Listen to Mark DeRosa break it down on MLB Network, talking about Miguel Vargas' adjustments and his swing.
All right, let's take a look at this first before we go into the boards. April 21st. Take a look at where his hands are. Kind of even with his chin. Now he's got them much higher. Whatever reason it's working for him, I always feel like hands down low, you get a little bit more rotational because you start to forget your top hand. I always liked feeling like my hands were even with my ear just to get my top hand involved in the swing. Give me a side angle real quick. Pause it. Ooh, do you see how much lower? Kind of even with that Nike emblem on his jersey. And now he's got him up by his ear. And it's led to serious damage. Let's do the two boards. Splits with the White Sox by games. First 64 games, he hit $1.17. He gets traded over from the Dodgers to a new park. You go from winning to losing. And you're hitting $1.17, it's tough to get up in the morning and drive to the yard. Last 53 games, .284, 27 extra base hits, slugs through the roof, strikeout percentage is cut in half.
That's Mark DeRosa on Miguel Vargas, who has made an adjustment with his hands and has been red hot since, as he's mentioned, the big adjustment from those first 64 games he's played, and the last 50-plus has been quite ridiculous for Miguel Vargas. Which begs the question, after Shane Smith's last two appearances where he gave up 10 combined runs in just over 6 innings, is Miguel Vargas the answer for who's going to be the White Sox representative in the All-Star game? Personally, I still go with Shane Smith. there's not as many good pitchers, so because of that, he's going to get a little bit of a benefit of a doubt that he'll have more room to work. There might be some pitchers who aren't throwing. But also, I think the story about Shane Smith coming from the Rule 5 draft, not getting his opportunity with Milwaukee, and then eventually getting his opportunity with the White Sox, is one of the best in baseball. And I hope he begins to turn it around again and he's able to make a slight tweak so he doesn't get hit as hard in his next few outings. But Shane Smith, to me, is still the White Sox all-star. And Miguel Vargas is great. And I think he deserves an all-star nod, and I think he could get there eventually. But right now, for me, I think the storyline trumps it a little bit. I know Brendan Riley, our producer, and I know Charlie Bevins, our producer, are very big Miguel Vargas fans. Charlie, where are you on this? Do you think Miguel Vargas is Miguel Vargas fan number one in the station? What do you think? Is he the all-star for the White Sox?
I think he has to be. I'm always like a little weary of these hot start pitchers that I think a lot of times like that stuff kind of comes back to earth. But what I see from Vargas, I really feel has been real, because again, we talk about the actual like tangible changes he's made to his approach and his hand placement and all that. But to me, like, all it takes is one really good start from Shane Smith to get this thing back on the rails. Like that's really all it needs to be. And then we kind of look back at this small little stretch as like, hey, that was just kind of the, you know, a little bit of an outlier in what was otherwise a really good season. For me, I just love the power that he potentially brings, and the again, like what a success story it's been for the front office in acquiring him and for him to take the steps he has. So for me, like, I would probably expect Vargas to be the all-star over Shane Smith.
And Shane Smith's ERA has gone up, as you said, and it takes just one start to get it back on track. He was at a 2.38. He's at a 3.38 now, which still is a very good ERA, especially for a guy you took in the Rule 5 draft. A lot of fans saw him right away and said, could this be a guy who's a front end of the rotation guy? And even if the outcome is that when Shane Smith becomes a veteran, he's more of a middle rotation guy, that's still a huge success story for the White Sox. I understand what you're saying with Miguel Vargas. The power is there. Brendan Riley, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was a point in the season when Miguel Vargas started to turn things around that I wondered if he might be the answer. I think right now to go that route's probably a little bit of recency bias. I mean, Shane Smith's had a couple bad starts. It's not like he's been piling up bad start after bad start. You don't have to go that far back to see him still being really good. I think we're forgetting Miguel Vargas started the season slow. Like right now, I do think it's still Shane Smith. I think Miguel Vargas made the conversation interesting. You know, at the beginning of the year, it maybe didn't look like it was going to be. And, you know, you asked me the question, will Miguel Vargas have all star years in him? Yeah, I think he might. But I think, like, when we look at the full picture of the season, I would still be in favor of Shane Smith between the two of them.
That's where I think I am so far, and Shane Smith should have one or two more starts before All-Star game rosters are announced, and because of that, I fully expect him. I hope he's able to bounce back. He got some tough competition coming up with the Los Angeles Dodgers going through the NL West here. But if Shane Smith's able to bounce back, he will probably solidify himself as the White Sox All-Star representative. White Sox take on the San Francisco Giants. First pitch is coming up at 3:10. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We'll be back in a few to break it all down. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller today. First pitch between the Giants and White Sox at Rate Field coming up at 3:10 today. It's Robbie Ray, former Cy Young winner, against Adrian Hauser. We've got a good one for you today. Robbie Ray, when he was with Toronto, won the Cy Young in 2021. That year, he had a 2.84 ERA, led the league in starts with 32, pitched all that he possibly could, was actually 15th in MVP voting, too, and had a 6.9 WAR. This season, he's leading the league in wins, and that 2.84 ERA he had when he won the Cy Young, well, he has a 2.83 ERA, just 0.01 lower in the ERA column this year. It would be the lowest ERA of his career if he's able to keep this pace up across the full season. He's had a huge bounce back. He had Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago, and has bounced back since. He had a little bit of a hamstring injury as well last season, which cut his season short. Since then, he's bounced back with the San Francisco Giants and been an ace this year. The pitching's really carried San Francisco. They sit 6.5 games back of the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NL West race, which is, of course, one of the best divisions in baseball. White Sox in a 12-game stretch, all their games against the National League West across these next few. They have a series with the Dodgers coming up starting next week, and then they travel to Denver to take on the Rockies on the 4th of July. Let's pause 10 seconds before we get the White Sox lineup for station identification on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP, WTVC, HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
This is how the White Sox will line up against Robbie Ray today. It'll be Chase Mydroth batting leadoff. Austin Slater in the two-spot playing right field. Miguel Vargas, who we already talked to today, and has been red hot across his last 50 games. He's playing first today, moving over from third to first. Andrew Benintendi's been pretty good, especially at home recently. He's in left today. Edgar Caro behind the plate. Kyle Teal's getting the day off. Lenin Sosa will be your DH. Michael A. Taylor with Luis Robert Jr. out is the center fielder. Josh Rojas over at third, and then Vinny Capra getting the start at shortstop today. That's your lineup. We'll dive into the San Francisco lineup later in our pregame show. That starts at 2:30, and we'll break it all down. When that comes up, first pitch with Len and DJ at 3:10. Before we get there, though, there's a really cool documentary out right now. It's called 05 Forever. You can find it on the Chicago White Sox YouTube page. I also read that it is supposed to air on Chizin, and you can also see it on MLB.com. It's about how the 2005 team came together and eventually, of course, as we all remember, won the World Series. There's some great stories in there, some you may have heard before, some that may be new to you. I want to start off with a story about how A.J. Pierzynski joined this Chicago White Sox team, because initially Kenny Williams wasn't sure if this White Sox team should add a catcher like A.J. Pierzynski. Here's a great story from Kenny Williams, is the main guy telling this one, about how he was talked into bringing A.J. Pierzynski onto the team.
I'm sitting with Jerry Reinsdorf at a coffee shop. I said, hey, there's a problem. This guy, Pierzynski, fits what we're trying to do. He's not the most popular guy, but that kind of bring it to the ballpark attitude every day, grind it out, we need that on this team. He's going to get under some people's, you know, crawl, but so what? But we got a problem because we just signed one person that just played with him, and
I think he was the first one to say that when AJ's on in that other dugout, you hate him, and when he's in your dugout, you hate him a little bit less.
And we don't know how to fix that. Plus, I don't know if AJ really, you know, wants it like it looks like he. In any case, Jerry says, "Well, you know, Hawk Harrelson, I think, lives in the same community as AJ." So I called Hawk, and I said, Hawk, here's what we're dealing with. I don't know if he fits. I don't know if he's going to want to, you know, kind of assimilate to what we're trying to do. And Hawk cut me off and said, I'll be back. I said, where are you going?
I'm going downstairs.
I'll let you know. AJ's got a good heart. He's a good guy. But I'll make sure that he knows that don't come in here and disrupt anything. So he cut me off, got off the phone, went around the corner, and he and AJ had a heart-to-heart.
Hawk had always wanted me to be a White Sox, and you know, it took some convincing, but eventually we got it to work out, and it was a great fit. And plus, I got to play against Minnesota 19 times after they had traded me away, so it was always an added bonus.
Hawk calls me back and says,
I just saw him.
Everything's all right. You got him in your stable, big partner. I'm like, okay, well, let me call his agent. If it weren't for Hawk Harrelson, I don't know that we'd make that move.
You can put it on the board! Yes!
That one cracks me up, and I love the little drop of I just saw him, which is really Hawk Harrelson going down to visit Todd Frazier coming from the booth when Frazier suffered an injury That cracks me up every single time. AJ Pierzynski, obviously the heart and soul, one of the hearts and souls of that 2005 World Series winning team. And maybe the heart and soul was the manager. That's Ozzie Guillen. There was also a great story about how Ozzie Guillen was offered the Chicago White Sox job. Didn't sound like he was expecting it. Take a listen. You judge for yourself.
I was working for the Marlins. I was in the playoff against the Cubs.
Ground ball in the hole is short. And fumbled by Gonzalez and everybody's safe. The Florida Marlins, for the second time, are going to the World Series.
I remember having dinner with Jerry, nothing about managing. We talk about the team, talk about the Cubs, Marlins, what I was thinking about it, you know what I mean, this family thing. Jerry told me, say, okay, we're going to hire you as a manager. We'll talk about contract later, whatever, but we want you to manage the White Sox. And after, I got quiet, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, I was shocked, numb. I was ready to manage, especially in Chicago. This is the place to see me growing up. I want to be a manager in Chicago, of course.
So if White Sox fans, you have some time this weekend, give that documentary a watch. It's only about 15 minutes long on the Chicago White Sox YouTube page. I really enjoyed watching it. It gave me chills at times just thinking about some of those moments and how they acquired players like Scotty Pods and Joe Creedy, looking back even a little bit farther, and discussing Bobby Jenks and his arrival to the ball club. All of those players coming in. Paul Konerko's interviewed in it as well. More episodes are going to continue to drop up until two weekends from now, when it is the 2005 team reunion, and White Sox fans celebrate the 05 reunion weekend with us at the ballpark. Don't miss Saturday, July 12th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 3:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans, 21 and over, will receive a Mark Burley replica statue presented by Miller Lite. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/2005. We got a good one for you today. Chicago White Sox against the San Francisco Giants. First pitch is coming up at 3:10 p.m. And we talked a little bit earlier about Adrian Hauser and how this is an important start for him, because as the trade deadline approaches, he's been a really good player. Since he came to the club on May 20th, Adrian Hauser has a top 10 ERA in the American League at a 2.27. That puts him on a list with guys like Jacob DeGrom, Tarik Skubal, Garrett Crochet, Hunter Brown of the Houston Astros. Since he's come back, he's been as good as, nearly as good as some of those guys. He's been a stopper for the White Sox. So he'll try to continue that today against Robbie Ray, the former Cy Young winner for the San Francisco Giants. Going over the probables for the rest of this series, Justin Verlander slated to make the start tomorrow for the San Francisco Giants. White Sox have yet to announce their starter in that one. On Tuesday, Shane Smith is listed as the probable against the Los Angeles Dodgers against Yamamoto. Sean Burke against Clayton Kershaw on Wednesday. Tune into that one, because Clayton Kershaw is going to be looking to pick up his 3,000th strikeout. A big milestone for him. I believe he could become the fourth left-hander in Major League history to make that accomplishment. And then it's Aaron Civale getting the ball again on Thursday on the rubber against Dustin May against the Los Angeles Dodgers. That one, first pitch at 9:10 Central. We're going to take a quick break here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. When we come back, we'll discuss more about the San Francisco Giants and the Chicago White Sox. Also, we'll hear a little bit more from Brian Bannister on the development of some of these pitchers. That's all coming up next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. I'm Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. First pitch between the San Francisco Giants and Chicago White Sox coming up at 3:10. Luis Robert still out of the lineup with hamstring tightness. He will be a no-go for the Chicago White Sox today. We will get to that in a little bit. But first, let's get to a minor league farm reports.
Scanning the globe. Charlotte, Birmingham, Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, Glendale. Let's take a look at the White Sox stars of tomorrow.
It's time to check in down on the farm. It's the White Sox Farm Report on the White Sox Audio Network.
Well, White Sox fans, there's good news regarding Colson Montgomery. He's starting to heat up. He's been better ever since he came back from his Arizona Complex League stint with Paul Janish. And this week, he's been hitting the ball really hard. Across his last two games, he has 5 hits and a pair of home runs. Just 2 nights ago, he went deep twice.
Driven high in the air, though. This is deep to right field. Back it goes, and he says, I see on the Topps ice cream scoreboard. I'm going to leave the yard. Colson Montgomery does have great power. That's his 8th home run on the year, and it's 1-0 Charlotte.
Strikeout player of the game.
And doesn't matter on this one because he drives it high in the air, deep to left center, and it's gone over the center field fence. A home run for Colson Montgomery, his 2nd of the night.
Colson Montgomery hitting much better so far in AAA. Last night, he had 2 more hits to go along with a double, drove in a run, 3 RBIs the night before with those 2 home runs, and he also walked once in that game. So he's been hitting a lot better recently. His stats still don't jump off the page at AAA, but that's because he got off to a really slow start to the season. At the end of April, he was hitting just 160 with a 227 OBP, and his average dropped all the way down. It was at 193 at the end of May. But you look here in the month of June, and the stats have been much, much better. He's up to a 205 batting average with a 286 OBP. In the month of June, his OBP is up to a 306, and he's over 800 in the OPS category. So Colson Montgomery is playing a lot better. Chris Getz was asked at the beginning of the week where Colson Montgomery is right now in his development.
You know, more than anything, just wanted to get as consistent as possible. You know, he's been nicked up with some minor injuries since he's come back from Arizona. You know, he's had a stretch of production and then, you know, took a foul ball off of his knee and it took a hit-by-pitch to his hand. So really to not only just consistently get him on the field, but put together some at-bats on a regular basis before we bring him up here.
Is that what you attribute his poor June numbers to? Is that health issues, or have you seen him slip into some things that you guys tried to address with the Arizona trip? Or what have you kind of taken away from this month for him?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. You know, I overall he has been healthy. We have seen some signs, and then, you know, that then there's some a stretch here or there that perhaps he's kind of getting exposed at times. So it's about closing the holes, making the adjustments, and continue to stay confident.
You've already kind of taken that step of sending him out to Arizona. What do you guys kind of search for next to get him to where you think he
just want him to maintain a routine. He understands, you know, what he needs to do on a mechanic standpoint. This game can be very challenging, and you can, you know, fall into these traps along the way. And, you know, he's still growing as a player and a person, and it's just a matter of being as consistent as possible on a daily basis with his routines and then the approach of the play.
Colson Montgomery is still rated by most sites as the number 5 prospect in the Chicago White Sox organization. If he were to join the big league club eventually, the White Sox would have a roster full of rookies. Currently, they're tied for the most in Major League Baseball on their big league roster with 9 rookies. That's tied with Miami for the most in Major League Baseball. Another AAA pitcher that hasn't been doing too hot, we'll dive into his last 2 outings in a second, is Noah Schultz. But Brian Bannister was asked recently on the Chicago White Sox podcast that was aired on CHSN. Brian Bannister talked about Noah Schultz and his path to the major leagues.
We just liked how he had unique movement attributes. He got big extension. His fastball seemed to play well above its individual attributes. And then he came out of the chute in spring training throwing 99 and really pitching like an ace. And then he added the changeup, which balanced out his arsenal, something he didn't have prior. And all of a sudden you had that,
Sorry about that. That was Brian Bannister on Shane Smith. We'll try to get to you in a second. The Noah Schultz audio. He's been moved up to AAA. So Noah Schultz recently in AAA, he hasn't necessarily been great. And what Bannister said in that podcast when speaking about Noah Schultz is that
he needs to sort of dominate at that level before he's brought up at a young age to the major leagues. And in the past two games, it really hasn't been great for Noah Schultz. Last night, he only pitched two innings. He gave up five runs on five hits, and the big number there is he walked four hitters across two innings. That's just not going to play at the major league level. The outing before that, back on June 19th, Noah Schultz pitched five and a third, so a little bit better, but he gave up six earned runs on eight hits. He only walked one in that outing, so a little bit better, and struck out five. But he has yet to dominate at the AAA level like he did at the AA level. At the AA level, he had a 3.34 ERA and was looking quite phenomenal as a pitcher. There's been talks that maybe he's a guy that in 2025 can make a big league debut. But right now, it is looking somewhat, it's looking tough. There's going to be a road for him to get there. He needs to pitch better at the AAA level before those conversations can start being had for Noah Schultz to make the major leagues. Back to the big league club now. The Chicago White Sox lineup today does not feature Luis Robert Jr. Just an update on him. He's day-to-day is what Will Venable is calling it. The White Sox have an off day on Monday. They also had an off day on Thursday. He pulled up with hamstring tightness in Wednesday's game. He was going after a fly ball. That's when it appeared to happen. With Michael Taylor, they converged. And he pulled up with hamstring tightness. Will Venable says one of the trainers told him that, hey, it's a no-go for Luis Robert right now. So he wasn't, he's not playing to, he's not in the starting lineup today. We don't know if he's available off the bench, but it wouldn't be a surprise if at this point that Luis Robert was rested until that off day on Monday, just to kind of give him a little bit of rest. And you don't want him to re-aggravate that hamstring, especially when he's had those injuries before. Heading up to the trade deadline, for Luis Robert, that's not something you want to mess with at this point. It's a really good pitching matchup today between Adrian Hauser and Robbie Ray. We've talked about it throughout the show. Robbie Ray, a former Cy Young winner. And Adrian Hauser has been really good for the Chicago White Sox. And as we head up to the trade deadline, it's once again going to be an important start for him to continue to establish that trade value. Hauser this year has a 2.27 ERA and a 2-2 record with the ball club. The Sox have mixed these veteran pitchers with some of their younger guys to really form a more solid rotation so far this season. That's been the strength of the Sox, is acquiring, scouting, and developing pitchers. And the Sox have noticed good things in their pitchers. Shane Smith, he's scheduled to start later in the week against the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was mentioned earlier that his changeups, what's taken him a long way. And on that podcast, Brian Bannister discussed how changeups have been crucially important for the Chicago White Sox. When asked what kind of is the bread and butter of this organization for their pitching staff, this is what Brian Bannister said.
We've been able to hit on a few changeups with Shane Smith, Davis Martin, and a couple guys that are adding changeups to the repertoire. That it doesn't have to be an elite one, but sometimes it just needs to be a good complement to the rest of their arsenal. If they already spin the ball well, they just need something to balance that out that goes the other direction. And I think our coaching staff has been really creative in that regard, and give a lot of credit to Katz and Wise, and then Zaleski on the minor league side, and Kurt Hassler. They've been doing a great job just introducing new concepts along with the affiliate coaches, and we just iterate through ideas. That's all we can do. You take these young guys, you see what they can do, you give a fixed time frame, you know the physics of and the logic behind arsenal upgrades, and you go after it, and you see what these guys are capable of.
So the White Sox pitching has been good, and that changeup has been big for a lot of their pitchers. Adrian Hauser will try to keep it on the track today and get it back to Shane Smith so he can have another good outing later in the week against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Some scores around Major League Baseball. In the top of the eighth inning, the Athletics currently lead the New York Yankees by a score of 5-0. The Tigers in an AL Central matchup are leading 8-4 against the Twins in the middle of the eighth. Twins trying to mount a comeback there, just put up 2 runs in the eighth inning. Nobody else has started yet. Mets and Pirates a little later in the day at 3:05. Rays and Orioles. Mariners take on the Rangers. Dodgers travel to Kansas City to take on the Royals. Blue Jays take on the Red Sox, Padres and Reds, Cardinals, Guardians. And then your night games tonight, Phillies at Braves, Nationals at Angels. That's going to do it for White Sox Weekly. Robbie Ray and Adrian Hauser coming up. We'll have your pregame show starting in just a few minutes. A good pitching matchup tonight between two seasoned veterans. Adrian Hauser and Robbie Ray, San Francisco and Chicago. Pregame show is coming up next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.